I think it will intensify. I think Putin feels that he's made concessions because he's actually released some high-profile political prisoners. But I think he will still lash out after the games are over, believing that the eyes of the world are no longer on him.
I'm not afraid to tell the world who I am. I'm Michael Sam. I'm a college graduate. I'm African-American, and I'm gay. I'm a football player, and that's all that matters.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Science fiction fuels Uganda's anti-homosexuality law, Russia's LGBTs prepare for a post-Olympics apocalypse, and a newly out U.S. college football star hopes to sack promophobia. Those stories and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Michael Allen.
And I'm Natalie Peoples.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending February 15th, 2014. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni may have already signed a draconian anti-homosexuality bill into law by the time you hear this newscast. It was once known as the Kill the Gays Bill, but execution for aggravated homosexuality was reportedly reduced to life in prison in the final version of the bill when it passed overwhelmingly in Parliament in late December. A government spokesman announced on Twitter on February 14th that Museveni was satisfied with a report by a group of lawmakers from his ruling National Resistance Movement with medical backgrounds that homosexuality is not genetic but a social behavior that can be cured. Museveni had demanded such scientific proof before he would sign the bill. The government spokesman also said that legislators, who are holding a retreat chaired by Museveni, welcome the development as a measure to protect Ugandans from social deviance. A spokeswoman for the National Resistance Movement verified the president's decision in a message to BuzzFeed. She also said that her party's lawmakers agreed with a proposal by Museveni to deny bail to accused homosexuals, putting them alongside accused rapists.
An earlier version of the anti-homosexuality bill, first introduced in 2009 in the East African country by an MP with close ties to the U.S. religious right, proposed the death penalty for acts of aggravated homosexuality, defined as having sex despite being infected with HIV, having sex with minors or the disabled, and repeated sexual acts with consenting adults. That punishment was apparently replaced by life in prison after an international outcry, though Ugandan activists say they still haven't seen the actual language of the bill. The pending law also makes conducting a marriage ceremony for a lesbian or gay couple punishable by 7 years in prison. Ugandan gay activist Edwin Sisange of the Africa Out and Proud Diamond Group told Pink News that President Museveni has given the anti-gay vigilantes a license to persecute, torture, discriminate, prosecute LGBT people and those perceived to be. The consequences of this bill are fatal to the Ugandan LGBT community.
In better news for sexual minorities, El Salvador's Legislative Assembly has soundly defeated a proposed constitutional amendment to define civil marriage as exclusively heterosexual. According to the Spanish news agency EFE, only 19 of the 84 members of parliament in the tiny Central American nation voted in favor. The measure also would have prohibited El Salvador from recognizing the foreign marriages of same-gender couples and banned gays and lesbians from adopting children. A constitutional amendment in El Salvador requires the approval of two consecutive legislatures, with a simple 43-vote majority in the first reading and a supermajority of 56 votes in the second. The bill originally won the simple majority vote in 2012. Previous efforts to make civil marriage heterosexual only have also failed to win the required two-thirds majority vote.
U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder published guidelines this week ordering the Justice Department to treat legally married same-gender couples the same as their heterosexual counterparts. The directive said that the federal government would extend all the benefits and privileges of marriage under current law to gay and lesbian couples whose marriage was legal in the jurisdiction where it was performed, and regardless of where the couple resides permanently. The guidelines include declaring bankruptcy, not having to testify against a spouse in court, and visiting a spouse who is behind bars. Holder first announced the major policy changes on February 8th during his keynote speech at the annual New York City fundraising dinner for the LGBT Advocating Human Rights Campaign.
In every courthouse, in every proceeding, and in every place where a member of the Department of Justice stands on behalf of the United States, they will strive to ensure that same-sex marriages receive the same privileges, the same protections, and the same rights as opposite-sex marriages under federal law.
It's a real challenge to keep up with all of the marriage equality actions in courtrooms across the United States. Just this week, U.S. District Judge Arenda Wright Allen overturned Virginia's ban on civil marriage for same-gender couples. Her February 13th ruling said that those couples have the same constitutional right to marry as heterosexuals. It's probably the biggest legal victory so far in the U.S. South for advocates of marriage equality. The judge put her ruling on hold pending appeal, so lesbian and gay couples in the state weren't able to immediately rush down the aisle. Judge Allen began her ruling by quoting an earlier marriage equality pioneer, Mildred Loving, an African-American woman who in 1967 successfully sued the state to marry her white husband, Richard Loving. Mrs. Loving declared on the 40th anniversary of that U.S. Supreme Court Loving v. Virginia decision that government has no business imposing some people's religious beliefs over others. I support the freedom to marry for all. The judge's ruling dismissed arguments by opponents of marriage equality that opening the institution to same-gender couples would harm children, declaring that those who favor one model of parenting over others must yield to this country's cherished protections that ensure the exercise of the private choices of the individual citizen regarding love and family.
With the support of newly installed Democratic Governor Terry McAuliffe, Virginia's Attorney General Mark Herring, also a Democrat, announced last month that his office would not be defending the state's ban in court. The Coalition for the Protection of Marriage, already a defendant intervener in the case, will continue to argue in favor of keeping the law as the case moves forward. The leftist Think Progress website reports that the coalition's earlier brief compared marriage equality to white supremacy. Meanwhile, Nevada Attorney General Catherine Cortez Masto, another Democrat, announced this week that the government would withdraw from the case challenging her state's marriage equality ban currently before the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. She said that with recent court victories elsewhere, the law is no longer defensible. Democratic Governor Brian Sandoval said he agrees with Masto's decision.
U.S. District Court Judge John G. Hayburn declared this week that Kentucky's ban on recognizing the legal marriages of same-gender couples performed in other states violates the U.S. Constitution's promise of equal protection under the law. While stopping short of declaring the rest of the state's marriage ban unconstitutional, Hayburn determined that it is clear that Kentucky's laws treat gay and lesbian persons differently, in a way that demeans them. Echoing the arguments in Virginia, Hayburn also wrote that the court fails to see how having a family could conceivably harm children, and that assigning a religious or traditional rationale for a law does not make it constitutional when that law discriminates against a class of people without other reasons. It's not yet known if the state will appeal the ruling. A separate lawsuit was filed in the same U.S. District Court in Louisville demanding that Kentucky also sanction civil marriages within its borders. Federal marriage equality lawsuits were also filed recently in the states of Louisiana, Missouri, Alabama, and Texas.
The Wyoming State House of Representatives handily defeated a marriage equality proposal on February 13th. The vote was 17 in favor and 41 against. Efforts in the past to create civil unions or domestic partnerships for gay and lesbian couples have also failed. In a small victory for rights activists, however, lawmakers in the Equality State also narrowly defeated a second bill on the same day that would have barred the state from recognizing the marriages of same-gender couples legally performed elsewhere.
The Indiana legislature has stumbled over the language of a proposed constitutional amendment to ban marriage equality there. Lawmakers in the Hoosier State first approved the ban in 2011. Legislative approval in the current session would have sent the proposal to the voters later this year, a final step in the process of amending the state constitution in Indiana. But prior to this week's Senate consideration, the House passed the bill without provisions from the 2011 version that also banned civil unions and workplace benefits for same-gender couples. The Senate failed to restore the more expansive prohibitions in the bill and return it to the House for reconsideration. Passage of the measure in this session needed to exactly mirror the 2011 version to advance it to the November 2014 ballot, as its proponents had hoped. But lawmakers will now have to approve the measure with exactly the same language as this year's version in the next legislative session in order for it to appear on the 2016 ballot.
And finally, Think Progress posted a story earlier this month describing anti-gay laws in 9 U.S. states that it said aren't that different from Russia's. Kansas emerged earlier this week as a potential 10th state. The Republican-dominated House voted 72-49 on February 12th to allow businesses and government institutions to deny service to gay and lesbian couples if it would be contrary to their sincerely held religious beliefs. LGBT rights groups described the measure as a license to discriminate. But Senate President Susan Weigel told reporters the following day that the bill is unlikely to get through her chamber in its present form, and that the Republican leadership there is concerned about the practical impact of the bill. Weigel directly rejected language in the House version that would allow government employees to refuse service to same-gender couples on religious grounds. Public service, she said, needs to remain public service for the entire public. Sexual minorities in Kansas are only protected from discrimination in government jobs. All other forms of discrimination against LGBT people in the Sunflower State are perfectly legal.
That's News Wrap for the week ending February 15th, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Natalie Peoples.
And I'm Michael Allen.
Will the U.S. National Football League kick off a new era of inclusiveness? We'll try to answer that question later in the program. Olympics are going strong in Sochi, but Russia is not playing games when it comes to quashing LGBT rights. While hosting the international festivities, the government has not been too busy to enact new legislation reinforcing its ban on adoptions by same-gender couples and adoptions of Russian children by single people from marriage equality countries. Violent homophobic attacks continue on the rise, as documented just before the Olympic opening ceremonies in the UK Channel 4 film Hunted that drew bitter criticism from the Russian ambassador in London. Many activists fear the situation will deteriorate even further after the Olympics are over. Russian lesbian journalist Masha Gessen has profiled President Vladimir Putin, and U.S. writer and college professor Jeff Charlotte reports about Russian repression in the current issue of GQ magazine. On the eve of the opening ceremonies, they each shared their concerns with MSNBC's Chris Hayes.
Masha, you wrote a biography of Vladimir Putin, which is also an incredible read, a great book. Why did Putin want these Olympics so badly? What is it about what he is doing to Russia as the Russian leader that made getting this such an unbelievable priority for him?
When he became president, he wanted, one of his great ambitions was to become one of the guys, to show that Russia was great again and that he was one of the world's leaders. And what a better way to prove it than to have all the guys come over for a big party to his favorite place, which is Sochi, where he loves to downhill ski. But also, Russia had suffered a disgrace. Well, the Soviet Union had suffered a disgrace during the 1980 boycott of the Soviet Olympics.
Right.
So this was...
And the remember, that 1980 is when the U.S. boycotted the Games. They were in Russia, and it was kind of half Olympics because the U.S. wasn't there, and it's sort of an asterisk next to those.
Right, and the U.S. And several other countries, I believe, boycotted the Olympics in response to Russia's invading Afghanistan. So this was going to be sort of Russia's answer to everything, to the humiliation that the Soviet Union suffered, then through the entire 80s, then the demise of the Soviet Union, and then the mess of the 1990s. And now Vladimir Putin had resurrected Russia and almost restored the Soviet Union and finally held the Olympics, and everybody came.
Jeff, you write about gay life in Russia at this moment. When you went to Russia to do this reporting, what were your expectations and what surprised you about what you found about the reality of gay life there right now under Putin?
I think what was really surprising was the pervasiveness of the fear and really the perversity of the law, the gay propaganda law. You know, one of the items in the law is this idea that a same-sex couple can't say that their relationship is equal to a heterosexual relationship. And so there's this is almost as if they're outlawing love. And you see, practically speaking, everyone I spoke to, people were going back into the closet. People had been living happily out lives. People who were forced to flee, like Masha, to keep their families intact. And it was a very, very dark cloud that really sort of hovered over every aspect of LGBT life that I encountered.
I remember during the Beijing Olympics, that became a real flashpoint for the policy of the Chinese government. There's huge protests, Free Tibet protests. In fact, remember the Olympic torch was essentially chased after by protesters. And there was a feeling among a lot of folks I talked to, Chinese experts and Chinese folks, that this was unfair, that essentially China was being singled out. What do you say to people that say that all of this attention on Russia's gay laws in the run-up to the Olympics or Putin is essentially unfair, that you're singling out Russia when there are tons of countries that persecute LGBT folks?
Well, just because someone else is abusing someone else doesn't mean that abusing is right. I mean, so I don't really understand that argument at all. But more to the point, do you remember what happened after the Beijing Olympics? How the world forgot about China, how China reinstated the death penalty, which it repealed in advance of the Olympics, how China cracked down and nobody noticed. That's what's going to happen here, except I think worse.
So you actually think that there's this kind of pause that's been pressed as Russia is so clearly in the world spotlight, and as soon as everyone's packed up and gone home, the crackdown will continue and worsen?
I think it will intensify. I think Putin feels that he's made concessions because he's actually released some high-profile political prisoners.
Pussy Riot among them.
While low-profile political prisoners have been going to prison, have been getting harsh sentences as the preparations for the Olympics continue. But I think he will still lash out after the games are over, believing that the eyes of the world are no longer on him.
Jeff, one of the things that comes through in your article and that has been the most upsetting about chronicling what has happened in Russia is A, the fact that things have moved backwards, but B, this combination of kind of thuggish vigilantism with tacit state support, that what you're seeing are people, citizens, stoning and beating up while the government looks the other way.
Yeah, you know, there's babushkas who gather stones to throw. There's a one demonstration where there was a priest actually blessing the stones before they're thrown. On the video, you can see the police smiling. And that reflects a sort of a trinity, a national trinity. And, you know, the hate has three faces in Russia right now. And the state is the mind. And the Russian Orthodox Church, unfortunately, has traded its integrity for access to power and has become the heart of this hate. And then you have these fringe thugs who are the hands, the fists, but they do so. They are, in effect, enforcing the law.
Putin has moved very close to the Orthodox Church. And of course, Pussy Riot, who you have a book out about, who are now here in the States, it just played a concert last night. Their great crime was having this kind of protest moment in the most sacred cathedral of the Orthodox Church. What is that? Why has that relationship intensified between Putin and the Church?
You know, that's a very difficult thing to unpack. I'm not even sure that there's a distinction. I mean, they both come from the same corporation. The Russian Orthodox Church has always served at the pleasure of the state. During the Soviet period, Russian Orthodox clergy served as the KGB. And Russian Orthodox clergy have not changed. They're the same people. And the head of the Russian Orthodox Church, the Patriarch, who has lobbied and campaigned very heavily for Putin, and Vladimir Putin himself come from the same corporation. They're both from the KGB. They're colleagues.
Right. Jeff, what is the future for the folks that you talk to on the ground there? Are they planning to flee? Are they going underground? What are they doing?
They're going underground. They're planning to flee. I spent a night having dinner with one family, two lesbians, and their son and their dinner. They were out a year ago, and now they're closeted at work. They're making their arrangements. Every night they get together at dinner and they talk about their research about where they can hide. I didn't speak to anyone who wasn't at least considering immigration or new lies to tell their coworkers to hide things.
Writers Jeff Charlotte and Masha Gessen appeared on MSNBC's All In with Chris Hayes.
Hi, this is Greg Louganis, and you're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
The Super Bowl may have fallen short of expectations, but the U.S. National Football League now has another media extravaganza leading up to its new player draft in May. Graduating University of Missouri Tiger Michael Sam is expected to be a high-ranking pick. But will the award-winning defensive end still be in demand now that he's come out as gay? He's gotten outstanding support from his team and his schoolmates, who even fended off a protest from the God-hates-you-know-who Westboro Baptist Church outside a Tigers basketball game this week, while inside the arena, Sam enjoyed a standing ovation. However, some NFL insiders have expressed doubts about whether the locker room is ready to be liberated. ESPN's Chris Connolly broke the story in an interview with Sam on Outside the Lines.
What have you come here today to tell us?
I came to tell the world that I'm an openly proud gay man.
How does that feel to say those words to the world?
It's a load off my chest. I told my teammates this past August that I came out to my teammates, and they took it great. They rallied around me, they supported me, and I couldn't ask for better teammates.
What did that moment feel like to tell your teammates?
It was, I was kind of scared, even though they already knew, but I was still scared of telling them, and just to see their reaction was awesome, and they supported me from day one.
When did you realize what your sexual orientation was?
Well, I knew from a young age that I was attracted to guys, and growing up, I didn't know if it was a phase or it was just something that I wanted to find who I was and make sure I knew what was comfortable. So I didn't tell anyone growing up.
Emotionally, what is it like to share this story with the world about yourself?
You know, Chris, this is something that I've known for a while. But, you know, this is just telling another person that, hey, I'm gay. And then it shouldn't be a big problem. I endured so much in my past, so much tragedy. And growing up, seeing my older brother killed from a gunshot wound, seeing my not knowing that my older sister died when she was a baby, and I never got the chance to meet her. My second oldest brother went missing in 1998, and me and my little sister was the last ones to see him, and we pronounced him dead 2 years later. My other two brothers being in and out of jail since eighth grade, currently both in jail. You know, there were some hardships, there were some tragedy and some adversity. Telling the world I'm gay is nothing compared to that.
That past could have crushed you, Michael.
It could have. I could be dead, you know, Chris. But I made a choice. I made a choice at a young age that I knew that I didn't want to follow that path of my brothers. I knew I didn't want to follow the path where I had to call my mom from jail and say, can you bail me out or run the streets or whatever. I knew that I wanted to have some success so my family could be proud of me.
You could become the first openly gay player in the history of the NFL. That's a momentous thing. How does that feel to you?
You know, Chris, I don't really look at it like that. I'm Michael Sam, and I'm a football player. I want to be a football player in the NFL. All that I understand how big this is because it's a big deal. Nothing has done this before. No one has done it, and it's a kind of nervous process. But I know what I want to be, and I want to be snap in the NFL.
Why do you think it's important for the NFL to know this about you before the draft?
Well, you know what, Chris? I was actually going to wherever team I got drafted, and I was going to tell the owner and the coach and the GM about my sexuality. And knowing 2 weeks ago that how many people actually knew, we expected that all the scouts knew. And because I did make it public to my team, and then once scouts came and asked about me, you know, they told about, like, Michael Sam's gay. But I didn't know how many media actually knew. And I was afraid that it would leak out without me actually owning my truth. I wanted to let the world know and tell them that, hey, I'm gay. Let me tell my own story.
How prepared are you for the things that people will yell from the stands?
You know, I never, and this is from high school, junior high school, and college. I never focus on what people say in the fans. To me, I spend my entire focus on the game.
They can say some very hateful things, Michael.
I mean, everyone can say hurtful things and hateful things, but I don't let stuff like that distract me.
How do you hope your coaches in the future and your teammates will deal with your sexual orientation?
It shouldn't matter. If I work hard, if I make plays, that's all that should matter. Can he help us win games? Is he a team player? That's all that should matter. And which I like to see myself as that. I am a team player. I can make plays. I can help teams win games. And that's all that should matter.
How concerned are you about getting acceptance with the other players?
I think players would see that. They don't judge me because I'm gay. They see, hey, does this person works hard? Can he win us games? Can he win us a championship? I can. It's a workplace. You want to act professional. And, I mean, and people will talk about the stereotype of gays being in the locker room. You know, it's to me, I think that it's a little stereotype that gay people are predators. And I like it's just very offensive.
What kind of negativity do you anticipate?
You know, some people don't see, you know, gay people playing in sports. But, you know, Chris, it is what it is. I'm happy with who I am. I know how to play the game. I'm a football player, and that's all that matters.
You're a football player responsible for a landmark moment in American sports right now. Why are you the right person to be in the spotlight at this moment?
Because I'm not afraid of who I am. I'm not afraid to tell the world of who I am. I'm Michael Sam. I'm a college graduate. I'm African-American, and I'm gay.
University of Missouri football player Michael Sam was interviewed by ESPN's Chris Connolly. In other outing news, nobody had to plant the idea in Juno and Inception star Ellen Page's mind. She came out as a lesbian at a conference supporting LGBTQ youth this week. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Michael Allen and Natalie Peoples contributed program material. Thanks also to Steve Pride. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by a grant from the Yavanna Foundation and through the generosity of our listener supporters. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org for program, donation, and subscription information, and for podcasts and social media links. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WPRR Grand Rapids, Michigan, KOOP Austin, Texas, 2SER Sydney, New South Wales, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.